Ladies and gentlemen, Football Scoop Podcast is back. QB1 is back. I'm a lefty. Zach's a righty. I'm back. Let's go. Great job Sunday. Sorry. I thought you guys, JB, Zach, did a wonderful job without Doug and I. We started shortchanging you guys. I was partying in the Grove still. Okay, so Ole Miss, LSU, I did that one. Ole Miss showed up. And when I say Ole Miss, I don't just mean the football team. I mean the party, the Grove, the atmosphere, everything. The stadium experience was unbelievable. Lane and his brother Chris were so emotional and excited after that one. It obviously meant something. For some reason, that game means something to their family more than a lot of other games. It was pretty powerful to see. There was some comments about the son.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a big prop guy, but sometimes the sun here is tough in the morning. So Ole Miss fam gave me that. It was everything you thought it was going to be. You know, we talked about, I thought it was going to be a pretty good game back and forth. It was a pretty good game. The flyover with the stealth bomber was amazing. The whole stadium was red. It was wild on field. I live in Baton Rouge, and I've talked to you guys. I think Nuss loves to throw the ball down the sidelines, and he's really good at it. And this season, they just haven't been calling that for some reason. And maybe, I don't know what's going on there, but his ball does not come out like it has in the past. He had a guy deep down the line, and he underthrew him, and it got broken up. I don't know what's going on there. I think Pete Golding's defense played pretty well. Trinidad Chambliss is a dude. He's elusive. Game changer. I started seeing these guys on ESPN talking about that post game.
I think you're about to say something complimentary to me, and then you cut out. So can you repeat that?
Yeah.
I can confirm he did cut out. It's not just Zach Barnett to hear it twice.
College football experts, Zach Barnett, John Bryce, Doug Samuels. Zach Barnett, before the game, told us, if Trinidad Chambliss goes 300 yards and pulls another big win, he's going to be in that Heisman conversation, might even be a front runner. Sure enough, and after the game, I hear the boys on ESPN go, man, maybe this guy might be in the Heisman conversation, Think about what he's done. It's unbelievable. Doug spotted this guy early on in life, told us about the whole story from middle school to high school to Ferris and now at Ole Miss. It's a hell of a story. And Lane and those guys are doing it. They're undefeated. They got a bye week to get Washington State, and then they get Georgia.
Yeah, so a couple of bye weeks.
That's not nice.
I know Lane complained that going up to the week that it wasn't a night game because he wanted it to be at night. That game looked incredible on television. The late afternoon sun combined with the mix of the LSU uniform and the Ole Miss baby blues, it looked like the Masters on TV. It just like every image was just a painting. You mentioned the Kiffins being emotional, and I'm sure this isn't top of mind immediately after the game, but you touched on it. If you had to bet your life on one team making it from the SEC, making it to Atlanta and thus to the college football playoff, it'd probably be Ole Miss right now. They have two off weeks, and then they're at Georgia, at Oklahoma. Probably not going to go 2-0, but if you go 1-1 of those games after that, it's all downhill from there. South Carolina, the Citadel, Florida, and then at Mississippi State. I'd say those are going to be easy, but as far as in this SEC where there's more parity in this conference than there's ever been, I mean, they're, in my mind, the leader in the clubhouse through Friday of this four-day tournament.
Yeah, especially because South Carolina's got a murderer's row, and they'll be so beaten up by then, you would think Ole Miss, has a pretty good shot there. And then State, by the way, after the game, we get back to the Grove, and the Grove's just amazing. It's just a beautiful sea of humanity. Mississippi State was beating Tennessee, and then they weren't, and then they lost. And the people in the Grove might have been happy about that. I'm just letting y'all know. It was something to witness. It was a day, boys. It was a day.
That's what makes – SEC, and there's a couple of others around the country, but it's pretty uniform throughout the SEC. It's that it's so special, and it's how I feel about the Cubs. Like, I would rather see the Cubs lose than the Braves win. And I'm wearing Braves shorts right now, and I would rather see the Cubs lose. And that's how it is. Like, Ole Miss fans got the best of both worlds because Mississippi State had to come from a head loss, and they dispatched an arch nemesis in LSU. And so, yeah, I have no problems believing that was a euphoric scene. And to your point, Zach, about calling that the Masters, the Grove is Augusta if Augusta allowed partying on the course. Like, that's what the Grove is.
I'm glad you brought up the Mississippi State game, Scott, because I meant to bring this up Sunday and I didn't get to it. But you go to that last play, Mississippi State's throwing in the end zone. And I acknowledge this is easy for me to say sitting here in my office chair on a Tuesday morning. But go look at Blake Shapen's last throw. It's a sidearm fling where his body's not into it at all. And obviously he's in the middle of it. There's traffic around him. But I'm sure when Jeff Lebby goes back and watch that film, he's going to think, man, I wish my quarterback had actually followed proper mechanics on a gotta have it throw. If you haven't seen that already, go back and look at that. I saw that real time. I was just like, eesh, that's disappointing if I'm Mississippi State.
One last note, close out from Ole Miss, and then I'm going to move on. I often talk about Pete Golding's defense, showing up and doing this. Charlie Weiss, you use the term schematic in terms of Charlie Weiss and think of the dad. I'm telling you, Charlie Weiss had some great play calls, play designs, set some things up, and then came back and got the big play when they needed it. Charlie Weiss is a dude.
Yeah, the fourth down call to end the game was just
spectacular.
Might be one of the best marriages in college football, the Charlie Weiss, Pete Golding, Lane Kiffin, like meld, just playing complimentary football is supremely underrated.
Yep. All right, so we had a huge game in the SEC, 230 right there, and then, holy smokes, we're just getting worked up. We got Alabama, Georgia, Oregon, Penn State, and it was college football just glory. Late night, watching that stuff go down. I used to say, people ask me all the time, who would you send your son to play for? I used to say Pat Fitzgerald. And I'd still say Pat Fitzgerald. Dan Lanning is in the conversation. Dude is all in. I want to show you guys. There's been a lot of talk post-game. He's on the field, and Catherine Tappan's going to interview him. And there's been a lot of – the lighting was weird, and he kind of looked a little intense. Nothing wrong with that. I want to show you guys real quick the video of him getting ready for that. He's just shaking hands with James Franklin. She pulls him aside and says, hey, you ready? We need about 15 seconds. Okay, he's like getting ready.
Yeah.
This is Dan Lanning.
Yeah.
Got to get it out.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's go. Golly. He's all in, and I'd send my kids to play for him.
Yeah, I love it. I love the energy and emotion because his team feeds off of it without becoming an emotional team. And you can see in the way that Oregon keeps its discipline in all it does. And a lot of times you see a team, and Doug knows it so much better than me, but if a team is overly emotional, it comes out in lack of discipline, be that penalties, turnovers, what have you. Oregon plays a bunch of clean football and feeds off of their head coach. I've been calling him for weeks, and I've had some blowback. I've been calling him college football's best motivator. I will not back off of that. I don't think it's close. Somebody said, well, what about what Ryan Day did last year to get that team? Well, he had the most expensive, most talented team in this decade that he finally got over the Michigan hump. And by mean, he got him over the hump because he didn't have to face Michigan again. So Ryan Day's a fine football coach. Dan Lanning has no peers when it comes to motivators, especially now that I think Kirby slipped a little bit.
He's obviously not a perfect coach. None of us are perfect, but I don't see a weakness in Dan Lanning's game.
Yeah, I would agree. Their creative department deserves a ton of credit. I think Lanning obviously sets the vision. Their creative department is unrivaled in college football. Another one of the great pairings as far as coordinators go with Tosh and Will Stein. Both do an outstanding job. I think the only thing missing from that post-game intense session was a little smelling salts like that. That's a defensive coordinator like to his core right there. There's no way you can convince me he doesn't have smelling salts before the game. That's the intensity I expect.
You know, we had spoken on Thursday, previewing this game. We said, you know, Penn State, until they show us they're not, they are what we think they are. You know, they don't win the big games. The quarterbacks are nice athletes and great, you know, versus air. But come game time in a big game, they just don't win the game. Oregon was so prepared for that final play. You literally saw the safeties and the linebackers. I mean, it was like they knew where the ball was going as the snap was happening. What did Drew Aller finish? Like 130 yards passing?
If that.
Yeah, it was like,
Yeah, we talked about it. Zach and I talked about it Sunday, which I know you said you're a lefty and your back is QB1. I'm going to lean on an old coaching idiom here and say if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. But anyway, moving forward, I thought that Penn State wasted an opportunity. Penn State finally wore down Oregon in the game, and that's how it scored 21 consecutive points and moved right through Oregon in the first overtime session. You know you have to go for two. I didn't understand not having a little more patience, and Zach brought that up on Sunday. But you had finally, I felt like, worn down Oregon, and their defense hadn't recovered because Oregon scored on one play. So that was bizarre to me to immediately go that route, unless you felt like this is a play we've never shown, and it's a play that our defense itself has never stopped, and that's obviously a play that Penn State has shown before.
I felt right there, Oregon scores that touchdown in the first OT, and I'm like, go win the game. And they don't. They kick the extra point. And in my mind, I'm like, man, I would have just gone for the win and just be done with this game. And I guess, as Dan Lanning, he goes, look, if we line back up and we each have, you know, same set of downs, I feel like my team is going to beat his team. So I guess that's confidence. I don't know. Doug, you're the road team, crazy environment. You score. You got a chance to go for two and win the game, but you play. What do you do there? You got any thoughts?
I mean, I think before we touch on that, I think James Franklin and Penn State deserve a ton of credit for the two unanswered touchdowns to force overtime. They showed a ton of resilience. I don't necessarily believe the narrative. This is the same James Franklin, Penn State squad. Like his team showed up and they came out on the short end of the stick. To say that they haven't made progress, and I know that's tiring at this point in the conversation, but like this, it's a really good Penn State team that came up short. We peed down our leg and peed this one away, right? As far as the overtime conversation goes, I do believe in most cases you want to go for two and end it right there in a hostile environment like a whiteout, right? But to Dan Lanning's credit, he has supreme confidence in that team that they could go 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 overtimes, and he feels like he's got a squad that's gonna come out on top. So there's a time when you feel like if you've got something great in the bag that you feel great about, then you call that 2 point. Otherwise, if you feel like you can outlast them, I think that's a strategy too that you can't overlook.
Yeah, I love that thought process, Doug, because I felt like when it went to overtime, one team felt lucky to be there and the other team felt unlucky to be there. And the better team was the unlucky team that was in overtime, which is why I thought, frankly, Penn State should have gone for two at the end of regulation. And I know the conventional wisdom is when you're the home team, you don't do that. But again, I point out they had laid on the Oregon defense for the last 7.5 minutes of that game. The Oregon defense was undeniably tired. You are the home team. You have two stud duck running backs and a quarterback that can do some things with his legs. I thought they should have gone for the win and tried to win at 18-17 right there in regulation.
So there's a comment made about if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any. So I'm going to bring this up.
I've never
Thursday heard that. we're previewing games, and if there was one bet you liked the most, it was Georgia.
Yeah,
3.5. Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah.
You don't have any odds makers on this podcast, in addition to those quarterbacks.
Zach said, look, if there's one thing that I love to watch, it's Georgia when they need to drive and get that touchdown. They do it. And Alabama had the huge stop. Doug is our football resident football coach. He's like, look, I love the look Kirby had. He had what, I think quads left. He had open edge. And they're like, you should make that. You know, it's a foot race. And Alabama just made the play. Change their season. It was great football. Any closing comments on that one?
I still think it should have been measured.
I said this on Twitter, JB. Like, the art of the measurement is absolutely lost in high school, college, NFL. Like, they just don't – you don't do it anymore. And to pull those chains out, stretch them, and for a home crowd to see whether that's short or you got it and everything erupts, like, it's such – It's an absolute lost art that no one talks about. I'm super passionate about it. I've asked for measurements probably three or four times in our four or five games. I've gotten zero of them. Like, they just don't pull out the chains for that.
The NFL literally does not, because they have the chip technology and they use the digital stuff now. But yeah, you're right, Doug. Like, I can remember being a kid in Neyland Stadium and having my own binoculars, and I used them to, like, monitor the chain gang on a measurement as much as I used them watching the flow of the game when I was sitting in the nosebleeds. So a guy like Kirby at home with an SEC crew should have been able to get a measurement, and I still contend it doesn't preclude you from going tempo if you're short. I'll just never be convinced that Georgia was short.
Well, maybe if they got that measurement, whether they're short or not, they would have allowed Georgia the opportunity to put the right running back in the game.
Yeah. And that tackle to get his gather his wits about him a bit more.
Yeah.
But that's not as egregious as something we didn't touch on Sunday, and that is still being talked about today on Tuesday, and that is the missed, the absolute blown call in Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, that caused Wake Forest to have to punt the ball away, and Georgia Tech was able to tie the game and eventually win in overtime. And it was an offsides call, and the replay is brutal. The guy's completely in the neutral zone, and it's at Wake, and an ACC crew missed that. It's just terrible for a Wake team that has no margin of error and won't have very many games that it has a chance to score an upset win against a top 16 opponent.
I did not see that one.
I'll share it right now.
All right, friends. Yesterday, the NCAA came out. JB had kind of given us a little – hey, just letting you know this is coming. I thought it was very nice. JB wrote it on Football Scoop last week. Said NCAA getting a little pushback from the threats, from the attorneys, the players. You got a bigger portal window. So, JB, tell me what the NCAA came out yesterday with the portal window, with the change.
Yeah, and so today's Tuesday, September 30th. They're going to vote on it a week from today, Tuesday, October 7th. The vote is viewed as mere formality at this point. They're going to go to a 14-day, a two-week single portal window that will run January 2 through January 16, 2026. It will be that loose time frame moving forward, as long as this one, they determine that this one works okay and works the way that's envisioned. In talking with coaches and GMs and even some conference-level people at power conferences, the NCAA believed very strongly we can win any legal challenge to only having one portal window instead of two. We cannot win if we only have 10 days. We've got to make a concession there. The athletes flat out want more than 10 days. I said, well, do they want 20? Do they want 30? And the response was, they don't care. They want more than 10 because that's longer to negotiate and to solicit the best offer. So that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a 14-day window, January 2 to January 16. That not only tramples all over the AFCA convention, it tramples all over the NCAA's own convention that's this year in National Harbor, Maryland, which of course is just a DC suburb. So AFCA in Charlotte again this year. But I'll be curious to see how well it's attended or not attended. And maybe most of those visitors will be the weekend before or the ensuing weekend, and some coaches will still be able to fly in and out and set legislation and visit some of their peers. But it's going to be tough. But again, like they just felt, everyone I talked to is in favor of one window. I was surprised at how unanimous it was in speaking to people that the NCAA felt so supremely confident from a legal standpoint that they could go to only one window, but the concession had to be the student athletes deserve more than 10 days. I don't know the magnificent difference between 10 and 14 days, except a 14-day vacation is always better than a 10-day vacation.
So the AFCA convention is only Sunday, and it's basically Sunday evening, the 11th, through Tuesday. They really – they will say they have not compressed it, but they really have compressed got Sunday night through Tuesday. And now with mid-year, you know, high school enrollees, you got transfers who are coming in, transfers who are still negotiating, your own team who you're negotiating with to stay. So it's open through the 16th now. How does a, you know, an FBS football coach come to the convention?
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, very, very difficult, especially depending on the stage of roster upheaval. That's why there was actually a lot of support out there. I don't want to say a lot. There was multiple people who supported 10 days in late December and 10 days in January, essentially just one portal window, but maybe like December 18th through the 28th and then the 2nd through the 12th. But basically that being one portal window. Number one, that gives the kids longer. Number two, it lets people get some salaries off their books in December. Like, I've talked to a number of GMs who are very concerned if they have payments set up on the first of the month, and it's different everywhere. Some do it weekly, mm-hmm. some do it bi-monthly, some do it the first of the month. But if you pay a guy on January 1 and January 8th after you get a recruit in or you take a transfer and that dude decides, now there's six tailbacks here, I'm out. You're not getting that money back almost certainly, or you're not getting all of it back, even if you have some buyback options in the contract.
So I continue to think that the tail is wagging the dog in regards to all of this. Why is the portal window is where it is? So guys can enroll at their new school and participate in spring football. Okay, that makes sense. But how, at the same time, you're inviting catastrophe. You're literally having the portal window open while teams are still playing their seasons. Not another sport in the world does that for a reason. And the last 2 years, we've seen the backup quarterbacks at Texas and Penn State leave their teams before their playoff games, inviting catastrophe for those teams if something had happened to the starter. Thankfully, it hadn't. I continue to think the ultimate fix here is to eliminate spring football, or at least just push it back to May, June instead of March, April. That way you can open the portal on February 1st, keep it open the entire month of February, yada, yada, yada. And that way it's after the entire season's over. And I mean, there's a reason the NFL does free agency in March and not January 2nd. Yeah. So I'm not trying to say that that's a perfect solution by any means, but I think what we have right now is completely backwards.
I think that this is progress because on January 2nd, only four teams are left, and those teams, their players get an exception. Like whenever their season ends, they get 5 days to decide after that. So January 2nd, you've only got four semifinalists left. I don't think that's as heinous as having it during the middle of the playoffs like it was last year.
Right. But what you've seen in both of those cases is you have the backup quarterbacks that are like, I know I can start somewhere and I know I can make X amount of money. And if I wait till my season's over, those opportunities are going to be gone. And this might be the one shot in my life to make seven figures playing football. Who knows? So I have to take this opportunity. I don't think the rest of the world will wait for them. If Duke or Missouri or whoever is choosing between two quarterbacks.
Well, I think that varies on your level of trust in the guy that you're trying to bring into your program. If he gives you his word, hey, I've got to finish the ride with my team here, you know it can end no later than January 19th. It's January 2nd. I'm telling you, you have my word. Like, maybe you sign a deal then. I don't know. But, like, if you're willing, you want this guy in your program so badly, if he's giving you his word, he's going to come into your program, but he's going to stay loyal to your team. I would think that's what a coach would want to see out of a young man.
I think the biggest struggle I have with it is the number one of the top complaints among college coaches is the recruiting calendar, right? And the AFCA convention had traditionally been kind of a reprieve from the recruiting calendar. Now you get guys that are going to go to the AFCA and their phone's going to be blowing up about, hey, this kid's entering the portal, or like now it's a different type of recruiting calendar that's kind of creeping into that time that they, you know, had traditionally been able to get away with their family and see their friends and coaching colleagues and things like that. So that's the thing I think most coaches are going to be upset about.
Two things. One, I think the AFCA issue, you can just move the AFCA to February. That would be helpful in my opinion for everything. But that's an AFCA issue, the coaches thing. The other thing is Dan Lanning, you know, has been one out there pushing for, hey, let's get all these games finished by January 1st. So start the season like a week earlier, skinny out some days in December. There's a way to do it. That to me makes a massive amount of sense. That way you finish your season January 1, and then you actually can have a logical portal after that. Because, Zach, you can't do a portal in February or March because the kids can't get enrolled. They got to enroll in order to practice in the spring.
I think Dan Lanning's right. I don't know that it's realistically possible to have your championship game on January 1, but I think January 10th should be by far the latest. And I saw yesterday it was reported that they've chosen the dates for this future championship games. Some of them are January 24th, January 25th. And it's just like, where's the leadership in this sport? Who's going to step up and move the mountains necessary to say it's not good for our sports. It's not good for the players, the coaches to be playing college football games on January 25th. Like let's move some things around and let's move it up 2 weeks and then play the semis on New Year's Day, play the championship game week after, whatever, and get it done by then.
Well, there may not be a quarterback on this podcast. There's definitely not an odds maker, but a wise man recently said, don't bring logic to an idiot fight. And you're trying to bring logic to an idiot fight. Like, it makes no sense. I don't believe you can do very much with moving up the season a week wholesale because of the heat factor. We're seeing more games than ever before delayed by heat. You can complain, Scott, but it's a fact of life.
Was there one game? Was there any games delayed by heat this year?
I mean, I can't think of one. I've never heard of such a soft thing. I mean,
am I wrong, Doug?
How much? Gracious.
When you're starting a season,
I live in Louisiana.
It's 80. Yeah. It was 87 in South Bend yesterday.
Dude, we do two-a-days still. Come on, man. I don't even want to hear this.
Laps do not count as part of two-a-days.
That was funny. I did receive several texts last night from coaches and agents asking literally, what does the AFCA do anymore? Like, there's no leadership from them. You're not hearing from them. They're not guiding coaches. They're not coalescing and saying, here's what we all want to do. They're not bringing great ideas to the table. I have no idea what the AFCA does anymore. And the whole convention discussion, I think you're going to see a stunningly small amount of people at the convention this year. It's just my personal opinion.
It wouldn't surprise me. I will say this, because we said we were going to talk about it. I did receive an email that Craig Bowles sent to AFCA member head coaches recently about the 5 for 5 and trying to gauge support to get that pushed forward. And so that is one thing. You're right. Like the leadership isn't invisible. It doesn't exist overall in the sport. But that is one thing that I wanted to mention on this podcast. And we did obtain the email where he's gauging coaches' interest in being able to ask FBS coaches and the AFC board for their feedback, quote, on the concept of 5 for 5 eligibility. I think the vast majority of FBS coaches and general managers are in favor of this change happening and ideally happening fast, in parentheses, this season. So it initially been indicated to me it could be voted on as early as October. I don't think it's going to be voted on next month. I am told it will be brought up next month, and they're going to try to push it forward for a potential December or January vote. So that's one more thing. We wrote about that last week, but I like speaking about it as well, because these are changes that have potential dramatic impact on college football. And also it could potentially change the volume of players going into the transfer portal.
Could that have been accomplished a year ago, 6 months ago? Could it have been accomplished 2 years ago, 3 years ago, or 4 years ago? The answer is yes. Right? We're sitting here talking about something like, all right, great. Now we're gauging interests. Sure. Great. Could have done that last year. You could have gotten this enacted already. You could have headed off all these lawsuits. You could have actually set, this is what the NCAA, this is what college football is going to do. This could have been done years ago. But I'm glad
there's so much.
No, that's great.
There's so many different things that are there for the taking that I think the AFCA needs to come out and say, this is what our members are. a constitution, a bill of rights, whatever. This is what we want the calendar to look like from January 1st to December 31st.
It would be nice. I agree. By the way, I do really like that they're going dead in December. That's great. That helps coaches focus on playoffs, bowl games, that experience, transition with college kids, which is always important, and their own families around Christmas. That's all great.
And it helps with roster retention because you can spend more time.
That's what I'm saying. Transition with college kids. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you got in and out, and you got all sorts of, you got to spend time with your people. Gentlemen, we're 30 minutes in. I wanted to go into some coaching change discussion, but why don't we do unique ones on that? All in favor?
Yeah.
QB1 says that's what we're doing. With that said, ladies and gentlemen, we're out. God bless you.